Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
I'm Michael Stratton, or Mike Stratton.
Oh, you can
talk
be Michael.
Talk about identity. I almost texted you today and said, "Hey, Morg."
My name is Morg. Morgan Bowen.
You're an organ. Or is that Korg? Korg is what I'm thinking of, isn't it?
No.
Grandma called me Morgie. So Morgan. In my family, my grandma would call me Morgie. And my dad actually called me Porgers. P-O, like something from my childhood. Yeah. That was like his affectionate name for me.
This is a great segue into adverse childhood experiences. Yeah.
Did you have a nickname? Anybody call you?
Let me think. What am I? No, I think it was always Mike.
Mikey.
No, I think it was always Mike.
What about you?
I mean, we can segue still because my grandfather did not like my father. My father named me Dedalia.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the one really good thing that he did for me because now I appreciate it. So growing up, though, I was always Charlie. Because my grandfather refused to
call you Dedalia.
Just my grandfather called me Charlie. I mean, nobody else called me Charlie. He just didn't want to call me Dedalian or Day because my dad named me. How much he did not like my dad.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. We're going to schedule some sessions.
We're chipping away. We're chipping away at the...
We're getting to know a little bit more about Dedalian every time we do this. It's fascinating, isn't it? And it's the cool thing about this podcast is that I think when people do listen to it and they listen to it over time, it triggers different things for them and it opens them up in a way that they start to look at themselves a little differently and they see maybe patterns or like, okay, this explains this trend I seem to have or this characteristic or...
And definitely one of the things that I appreciate about you guys is that you actually share your personal stories because a lot of the times I know like mental health professionals, people look at them and they think they got their crap all together and they don't necessarily have that going on.
It's both. I do think people kind of work in their wounds. And I think that's true kind of across the board. If you want to, you know, see people who grew up in chaotic households, you know, go to an emergency room and, you know, talk to the people that work there. And chances are there was a lot of chaos and a lot of
I used to work
trauma.
In the emergency room.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, Morgan.
Why are you looking at me? That's really interesting because when I thought about working in the ER, I was like, I would never be good at that because it's so chaotic and I just didn't ever really think that I would be great in an emergency. But when I got there, I was really good at it. And I could, in the midst of chaos, I could really focus and just respond in a way that was very surprising to me, but I've never thought of it like what you just
generally good
framed
in a crisis.
It there, Michael.
Weird situation like that, I'm usually pretty much the calm one around,
yeah,
which is always weird to me.
Well,
like everybody else is kind of freaking out, and I'm like, well, somebody needs to take care of the situation, and we can't go all crazy doing it,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, but thinking about my own childhood, there was. It wasn't, you know, chaos, like the chaos was certainly wasn't like an emergency room chaos, but I guess, you know, there was a lot of emotionality, a lot of stuff that happened that was external to my situation and was really about my parents or, you know, the larger dynamic that you just kind of weathered through, I guess.
Well, nothing is all one way or the other. Right. So, you know, my own family, they were people that were very kind, very loving, upper middle class. We didn't want for anything. And every now and then when they drank too much, what I say is the monsters came out, you know, and just got hysterical and drunken and that kind of thing. But most of it was really, really good. So it's anyway.
The same for us, yeah. Except there wasn't a huge amount of drinking. My parents did drink, but that wasn't what drove the
jealousy. Parents, yeah. Was it jealousy?
It was definitely my parents' relationship. And yeah. they were married at 21, and they loved each other, and then they didn't. At some point, that stopped. But I think the loving stopped before the marriage ended. And so the marriage didn't end until I was an adult. So there was moving. We were a military family. There was a lot of moving and just a lot of changing of scenery and new schools for us and new situations and a lot of, you know, we're in a new place and here you go, here's school or here's the YMCA and yeah. Figure it out.
You know, it's kind of a cliche, the idea that people are doing the best they know how to do. Yeah. And I don't know if that's always true. I try to think of things in that way, you know, in terms of giving people some grace. As a parent, you know, I can look back at things and say, I can't believe I did that. Mm. Or I thought that was a good idea to handle it that way. So I see it differently now. I see my own parenting styles differently now than I did at the time, you know, but anyway.
And we're going to talk about the ACE, the Adverse Childhood Experience questionnaire. And one of the, for in my experience, and it'll make more sense when we talk about the ACE questionnaire, is that I always felt cared for. I never felt that my parents were going to pick me up or I was going to, you know, have to find my own way home or, you know, I knew that in the grand scheme of things that they were going to take care of me, that I was going to be taken care of. That's that feeling true. Of safety and security, even though it was kind of a rough ride sometimes, was
yeah, mostly true for me too. But I think everybody I've ever talked to in my life has had that experience where they didn't get picked up.
Well, that's true. That did happen.
I was the middle child, so a lot happened to me in that area. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let's go through.
And I
this.
Knew my parents loved me too. I did know that my parents loved me.
So there's 10 categories of adverse childhood experiences, okay, or ACEs.
And just to frame it, this is something that this is a questionnaire that was developed, yeah. And I use it mostly when I'm on an intake. So before I see somebody, I have them fill this out, and it gives me some measure of what their childhood experience was
like. Yeah, and this would occur before you were 18 years old. So let's just go through them one at a time. So the first question is, did you feel that you didn't have enough to eat or had to wear dirty clothes or that no one was there to protect you or take care of you?
I would say no. I mean, I didn't feel that way.
I'd say no.
I would say no. I do have some memories of being very hungry as a little kid, and there was but basically I would say no, yeah. Number two, did you lose a parent through divorce, abandonment, death, or other reason?
I did not. No.
I did.
That's one for Didalian.
All right, I'm keeping score here. Hold on.
Keep score. Okay. Did you live with anyone who was depressed, mentally ill, or attempted suicide? That would be a yes for me.
Okay.
I would say no.
Okay.
Let me read that. Did you live with anyone who had a am I on the wrong one?
We're
at
number three.
Did you live with anyone depressed, mentally ill? No.
Yeah, and that was a yes for me.
So one for Morgan.
Yeah.
One for Mike. None for me.
My dad was very,
oh, sorry,
very depressed.
Bye-bye.
He was very depressed. He was on medication a lot and talked about suicide a lot. So, okay. Yeah, let's do number four. Your voice is great.
Did you live with anyone who had a problem with drinking or using drugs, including prescription drugs?
That'd be a big yes for Mike.
Mine was a no.
Really? No one?
My parents. I mean, you know, we dabbled in, you know, my brothers.
Well, your brothers, though, I mean, they didn't. I mean, because it says anyone who had a problem.
But it wasn't a problem.
Okay.
You know, at that time. Okay.
All right. I think by the time
you're,
I'm done.
You're doing pretty good.
I know.
I think I have to say yes by the time I'm done. I mean, my dad definitely had some issues, but that was after second grade. But I also think there was somebody else in my family that might have been drinking, and I just wasn't really aware of it. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. And you aren't always as a child. And it's not until kind of looking backwards that you recognize, oh, maybe there was something going on.
Yeah.
And that did impact the situation that was happening.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do number five.
Did your parents or adults in your home ever hit, punch, beat, or threaten to harm each other?
No.
No, for me.
My parents.
To harm each other, no.
No.
Yeah. No.
They'd yell, but they would not.
Yes, yell.
All right. Number six. Did you live with anyone who went to jail or prison?
No.
No, for me.
Yeah. I did.
Okay. You're up to three.
I'm working at it, man. Did a parent or adult in your home ever swear at you, insult you, or put you down?
That would be a yes. That one for me is a yes.
Welcome to the board, Morgan.
I know.
Morgan's on the board.
I'm trying to catch up.
I would say no. I put you down. My dad would, I would try to do things that would get his approval, and he would just say things like, you know, don't quit your day job. But that wasn't before I was 18.
Sounds like my situation where it was more humorous or jovial or not jovial. What's the word?
I don't know.
Because I can say yes, but it was all or not.
I would say no. I would say he did not insult me. He would. I think he had a hard time giving a compliment.
Because I would say we just joked back and forth.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So am I marking one down for you or not?
No.
Okay.
No.
Me neither.
I'm going to go no.
I'm going to say no as well. Did a parent or adult in your home ever hit, beat, kick, or physically hurt you in any way?
It's a no for me.
No.
Now, are we talking about
spankings?
No. I mean, early in life, yes.
Yes. Then that's a yes.
So that's a yes. Right. Are you a yes?
No, I would say no to that. There was one occasion where my dad and I got into it, but it was not, I mean, I was the one that instigated it, really.
Okay.
And I was 17 at the time, and it was after, a lot of.
This is, yeah. I was going to say that.
So I take ownership of that. I have taken ownership of that, or at some point in my adult therapy life, I took ownership of that.
Number nine, did you feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were special?
No, not no one.
I don't even know how to answer that.
Yeah.
When you say it that way, not no one.
Not no.
I mean,
I would say no.
And I definitely felt loved.
I would say no.
Okay, so we're all good there?
Yeah.
All right. Did you experience unwanted sexual contact, such as fondling or oral, anal, vaginal, intercourse, penetration?
No.
I would say no.
No. All right.
That's it. That's the 10. So let's give us, what's our scores?
So now what are we supposed to do? A point per each one?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got two, Mike. Morgan got one, and I got four.
Okay. So let's look at what that means.
All right. Where do I go to do that? We did not get ready for that.
Well, I can tell you that the idea is the higher the score, the more
greater likelihood there is that you will develop some kind of an issue, either mental health wise or even physical in some way. So adverse childhood,
In the large studies of this, the people with higher scores had a greater incidence of mental health diagnoses later.
Yeah. Yeah.
In their life.
Yeah. So, for instance, none of us had a five, but a score of four or more indicates a person has experienced a significant number of childhood traumas that can increase the risk of a range of health problems.
And that is also true. It's not just mental health issues. It is other health issues.
Well, I've wondered about that thing. Like, no one in my family has diabetes but me. No one in my family has Parkinson's except for my brother. Hmm. And I'm like, is this connected to stuff that we experienced as a kids when my parents' marriage was really pretty rough, when they were both having a really hard time with things?
And I don't know. Definitely for lifestyle influenced illnesses, which I mean, I guess there's not really many that aren't lifestyle influenced. So things related to smoking, drinking, using substances, so heart disease, diabetes, things that are heavily influenced by lifestyle choices that cause issues later on.
Well, the one thing I looked up here, it also says even at 1 in 3 can still indicate increased risk for certain health issues. But it seems to be 4 is the...
is kind of a cutoff for it to be bigger.
Yeah.
And at least a couple of those were like probably half a yes, half no for me too.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. So, so it's an indicator to, you know, be careful and watch your health and maybe get help. Maybe get help when you notice that, which I've been a lifelong consumer of mental health.
I think another kind of perspective on that is the idea of breaking a cycle of generational trauma and how the things that happen to us when we're children will impact us with our own mental health and our own physical health that then impacts our ability to parent or our choices that impact our own children. So having a knowledge of it then allows us to have some information that can frame the choices that we make in parenting.
You know, I said in the first section of this episode that picture of like the 25 people in my family and that half of them were addicted. And I remember looking at that at a time when I had gotten into recovery and realized like, okay, out of the 13 of us, only 2 of us are in recovery. Since then, everyone's gotten into recovery. Everyone who had it, I shouldn't say everyone. I would say the numbers completely flipped. I would say, you know, 10 or 11 of us are in recovery of some kind. So talk about, you know, changing the trajectory of that trend, you know, and it was culturally normative to drink heavily, you know, during the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s,
90s.
Well, and also not to talk about anything like this.
Yeah.
I mean, family.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have a sense of, it's not really guilt, but a recognition that, you know, my dad would not be super happy about me talking about anything related to, you know, his stuff. And I mean, he would respect my ability and choice to do so. It took him a long time to come to a point where he would talk about things and look at that. And he was a psychiatrist. I mean, there's a generationally, you just didn't talk about stuff like this. And that sense of silence, shame, the things that go with that just perpetuated, you know, in particular abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, which I don't know if that happened in my family or not, but doing the work that we do, when I started, you know, working in mental health, I was just astounded at the number of people who experience sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And because that just wasn't a part of my story, that was something that My parents, my mom in particular, was so, all if there was any sort of sketchy situation, she was on it.
Yeah.
And I've just been so astounded by the amount of people that are abused. And
how often have you had the experience where people tell you, they say, I've never told anybody this, or this is the first time I've ever talked about this? I mean, that is not uncommon as a therapist to hear those kind of secrets.
A lot of times in my role, because I do medication management, it is usually somebody who has talked about it in therapy and is in some type of trauma-focused therapy. Mm-hmm. And so for my purposes, my focus isn't trauma therapy. So it's helpful for me to know, to understand the experience of the person, but not to make that a focus of care. So,
you know, I don't know if we've ever done, I know we did an episode on trauma, but I don't know if we ever did a specific one on EMDR.
I don't recall hearing that.
Okay. That would be a good idea because a lot of people ask about that. Yeah, a lot of people questions about it.
I do EMDR, so we could talk about
that. EMDR is
eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a kind of therapy that's very much focused on trauma, helping people reprocess traumatic memory in a way that it doesn't have the same kind of impact on their life as it did at one time.
I believe you did give it a mention during one episode.
It's the power tool of psychotherapy is what I, and what people have told me, their experience of it, and my experience of it, of having been both someone who's done it, but also have had it done to me, or I've availed myself of that kind of treatment. You get to stuff at a deep level very, very quickly and resolve it or reprocess it, I would say, in a way. So that's a good idea, too. One of the things that you mentioned, Morgan, I don't know if I've ever talked about this before or not, but Freud, when he was first working with people, that's one thing that he found was he was basically doing kind of like an EMDR with women who would have been candidates for hysterectomies. He was working with hysterical women, and he would take a watch and he'd do this where their eyes would go back and forth, and he'd just have them free associate. And they'd do that every day, you know, for weeks and weeks and weeks, and just say whatever came to mind. And after a while, they would start talking about being molested by a family member, a father, an uncle, a brother, some family member. And he thought, oh my gosh, there's an epidemic of this. And he was going to write that up. And then he decided that can't possibly be right. You know, they must be fantasizing this. And he went down that other path, which was unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But but he was uncovering the same thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Probably not part of his world, so he just didn't feel like it was feasible.
I mean,
I know you can't speak for the man.
Well, given what the context, and you know, we labeled this as culture as part of this. The culture of that era was Victorian age, so I mean, things were really repressed. They would be so shocked to see. It's interesting because I just came back from New Orleans, and
a repressive.
And
that's
talk about repressive. It's totally not repressed. But one of the things we did, we went down for the jazz festival, the Jazz and Music Heritage Festival. But we went to the Storyville Museum, and Storyville was a place where there was a lot of prostitution in New Orleans, and to combat that, they cordoned it off, and they made a certain special part of the city, Storyville. They made that as a place where people could go and have sex with prostitutes.
Mm.
And they had drawings, they had pictures, they had film clips of different things. And even the stuff at that time that would have been pornographic, the people of that age would have thought of as pornographic. It was women in night clothes. It was rarely any nudity. Sometimes there'd be someone in a tub, but they were really covered up. And it's like how radically people from that era, if they would just walk out on the street of New Orleans today, they would be like, oh my gosh,
why are
people walking around dressed like
right.
this, you know, or barely dressed.
Instead of corsets and a petticoat with ankles exposed.
Yeah, for sure. So culture has changed a lot. The cultural context has changed a great deal. A Psychodelicious Conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health, or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is apsychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.